Mr. Pilchril One, could you tell me first of all where you were born and something about your family background, please?
I was born on 22nd of May 1914 at Silesia, southern Silesia, in the mountain of Beskid in Wisla. And there was nine of us in a family. I was the youngest of the boys, and the younger was still younger from me was my sister.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a sort of village builder. His construction was mainly wood and stone, you know, building village houses, repairing, and this was his work. And my mother had a farm, which before the First World War, they had about 200 or 300 sheep. And for the winter, we are living quite high, about 2,000 feet, you know, over the sea level. But there was very poor agricultural land. But we still had some pasture even higher. And for the summer, you know, the sheep were sent over there, you know, for the summer, and for the winter they were coming home. Unfortunately, during the First World War, the Austrian, because we belonged to Austria at the time, confiscated, you know, all the living stock, you know, for the army. So we, during the war and after the war, we were in very poor financial position. My father was, although he was over 50, he was conscripted, you know, the Austrian army, and my mother, with five small children, I was just 1 year old. And was left, and you know, when the few cows which we owned and all the sheep was taken by the Austrian army, so she was left by no means at all to live. Fortunately, there was only one cow. I don't know how. It was hidden somewhere, you know, in the forests. So this was our only means, you know, to survive, you know, these few years.
Was your area wholly Polish, or were there other people?
Yes, no Polish. 100% Polish. There were no other people. There were few Jews. But, you know, these Jews were assimilated completely. I mean, they had their religion, and in the neighboring village they have their synagogue. But otherwise, you know, we never thought of them as a sort of strange nation or something like that. They own, you know, the shop, the old one, was a postmaster in the village, and we were very friendly with them.
So was there no discrimination against them?
No, absolutely no.
And your family were Catholic family, were they?
No. This part of the southern Silesia, this was a funny enclave, you know, enclave. This was given in the 14th century to the Czechs by Polish king, And we actually didn't belong to Poland, until 1920. And, the religious turmoil was very, very sort of quick, and every 20, 30 years there was change of religion from Catholic to Protestant, to Lutherans. And finally, our village was more or less 100% Lutheran, as the whole Czechian region was mainly Lutheran.
Which region?
Czechian. There was a small town which was divided by in 1918 in two. One part belonged to Czechoslovakia, the other part was Poland, belonged to Poland. So I was on the Polish side, but the Polish people lived on either side, of the border. So the families were here and there, and even some of the farms lower in the lower part of this region were divided into, so part of the farm was in Czechoslovakia, the other part was in Poland.
What was your education?
When I was 12, I was sent, to the grammar school to Cieszyn, and after gaining, after 5 years, I think I had a sort of equivalent to the British O level. So then my brother, who then volunteered, older brother, who was a field surveyor and had some income, so then he decided that I should go to Warsaw and to a technical college. So I went to the technical college to Warsaw, where I graduated in 1935.
What was the family's political background? Were they interested in politics?
Yes, my father was interested in politics. I mean politics. There was rather only nationalism over there. Because, the German propaganda or Austrian propaganda was very severe, and they wanted, to tell the people that we are German or Austrian because of the religious belief. Because Lutherans only can be German and so on. But we are all Polish, the whole region. When I started the school in 1919, I think I started the school earlier than usual because, then there were some sort of meals provided for the school children. And the parents sent me to school to have a one-day meal, in the school. So I started school at 5, and usually we started the school at 7. But somehow they pushed me to school, and I had one American meal a day, at school. So this was the... Of course, after about 3-4 years, everything changed, and we ended much better off. Anyway, my parents couldn't afford, to support me, in the town, and to pay for lodging. So then my brother decided, who was much older than me, decided that he will take over, the financial burden of my education, and, he supported me, and then he transferred me to Warsaw.
So your father was Polish nationalist?
Oh, yes, yes.
And you yourself also?
Oh, yes, of course.
How did you come to be in the army?
After I graduated, from the college, I was simply conscripted to the army. It was, but I was conscripted to a infantry, and I was sent to infantry division near Warsaw to Skierniewice.
Were you happy about being conscripted?
Not specially, because I was not a military man. But it had to be, and so on. And I was conscripted because the organization was like that every division had her own officer's school, about 200. So I was in this officer's 200 officer school at Skierniewice. It was the 26th Polish Infantry Division.
What did you think to the training that you got?
This huge, we treated this, it has to be, generally, there were very few of us, in this 200, who wanted, who sort of thought that it is a good, very good idea. After about 6 months, so then the school commander selected those who volunteered, actually, asked who volunteered to be the officers in the officer in the army. And the active officer in the army. So then some of them, but there were not very many, about 10 or 15 who volunteered, and I think not all of them, just few of them, were selected, to go to the army, to the army school, officer school, yeah.
How were the recruits treated by the NCOs? Roughly or what?
Just rather roughly. There were few intelligent ones, but otherwise they were very rough and sometimes you could say stupid, simply. Of course, we always laughed at them, because sometimes it was so silly that.
Were you satisfied with the equipment that you had?
At that time, we didn't actually had a broader look what should the army have. So those we had, we said that is quite all right, and that, we didn't know, what actually should the army have.
Did you?
How should the army should be equipped,
Were there any foreigners working with the Polish army at that time that you remember?
Oh yes, they were, there were officers from the Russian and Austrian army. They were in our regiment because later, after I think 6 months training, at the school, we were allocated to the regiments. I was allocated to 37 infantry regiment at Kutno, and there were I think 3 or 4 contract officers, from the Russian army. One was Russian, 2 were Ukrainian, and 1 was from Caucasus.
Georgian,
yes. Later I met in Warsaw a colleague of mine, but in civilian life, whose father was a general from Georgian army, and he was in the general, he was working as a general staff general in the Polish High Command. Yes.
At that time, which country seemed to be a threat to Poland from your point of view?
No, we were talking about Germany and Russia, because they were the only neighbors which were... we were sort of sure that Russian will look for a revenge, you know, for the 1920-year defeat sometime. Of course, we didn't know when. And of course, when Hitler came to power in 1933, there was clear, you know, that the threat will come, you know, from the West, from Germany.
Were you in the army continuously from 35 to the beginning of the war?
No, no, only 1 year. Only 1 year. After 1 year, I was released from the army and they started, you know, the civilian life, you know. Then I was employed in Upper Silesia in the building department in Katowice. And then my friend of mine from Warsaw asked me if I could come to Warsaw, because his father had a sort of business, again building business, and he was ill and the business was going down. So he said, if we two can work, you know, together, so then we probably will be able, you know, to bring the business on the proper level. And in 1938, I went to Warsaw and joined as a partner, you know, this building business with a friend of mine. And his father, he was ill, he retired completely.
Can we go on to the outbreak of war on the 1st of September?
Yeah.
Can you tell me what you were doing then and what you
remember?
Yes,
I was still, you know, about, difficult to say, but few weeks before the 1st of September, I've got a special mobilization card on special request. So the mobilization doesn't concern me because I have to be called, you know, specially. Why it was, I didn't know. And no one somehow could tell me what did mean. What I was treated that way or that way. You know, even here Scotland, when I was and I met quite a lot, you know, of the officers of higher rank, no one could tell me actually what that mean, you know, on special request. So I've got this card and still working in Warsaw, and when the time by the end of August was rather nervous, so I said I have to take a couple of days leave and go to my family again, which was about 250 miles, over 400 kilometers. So I board the train and went again to see my family. And then on the 31st of August, I boarded the train to go back to Warsaw. And there was, because, you know, my birthplace became sort of a holiday resort then, so there was a direct train from Wisla to Warsaw. So I boarded the train in the evening. And on the 30th of August, and supposed to be about 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning in Warsaw. But it was not so. There was so much delays, you know. All the transport was completely paralyzed. So instead of coming in the morning, early in the morning in Warsaw, I came late, in the late afternoon. I have to admit that we had, before the war, we had very good railway service, you know, very punctual. You know, that if some train had to be 5 minutes late, so, there was very unsatisfactory, and the people started, you know, to complaining and so on and so on. But here, you know, about 12 hours late, the train arrived, and of course then no one was nervous because everybody felt that something is happening, but no one knew what. Actually, I was not far from the place where, because actually the war, according to the first plan, was to start 26th of August. And near my place, nearly Yablonkov, there was a tunnel, and you know, the German high command failed to stop the parachute group to be dropped near the 10th tunnel and seize the tunnel over there. And they were dropped there on the 26th, and of course Polish army was round there, but you know, there was no war, so everything was, you know, somehow, and they were hidden, they were waiting further the sort of instructions, which they didn't get it, because the German probably didn't want it to put it through radio, because then they'll be clear, you know, that they actually started the war. So they were hiding, you know, in the forest over there, and only the railway staff knew that something is over there. So the railway staff reported to the army, and, you know, the regiment commander went there, but there was nothing, because they were, I don't know, it was 12 of them or something like that. And they were actually, they had to block, you know, the tunnel, railway tunnel going to Hungary and then to Poland. But they didn't do it because, you know, the Polish guard was from both sides of the tunnel. And they somehow, they felt that they were not sure what actually happening. The war didn't start it, you know. So
this was at Yablonkov?
Yablonkov, yes. Yeah. And then in Warsaw, on the first next day when I arrived in Warsaw, so then in the early morning, there were sirens, you know, the anti-aircraft sirens, and some explosion be heard, you know, somewhere, not actually directly in my place. And of course the people were telling, oh, that's the exercises, and so on and so on. Somehow there was nothing announced by radio until about, I think, 7 or 8 o'clock. And this started around 6 o'clock in the morning. This explosion started. So then when it was announced that the war actually started, the German invaded our country, so then everybody knew what's going on. So I was hanging, and we still had a building to finish, but it was impossible because the workers some of the workers were coming, you know, out from outside the Warsaw. They couldn't come because the transport was not reliable. So some of them came and some of them didn't came. So there was everything, you know, not properly organized. So I simply closed the 3rd or 4th of September, I closed the place and said, all right, told the people when, if it will be quieter time, so then we start again the work. Now it is no use when two or three of you are coming in instead of 20 or 25. Now, and then on the 6th of September, you know, there was announcement by radio that all those young people, I don't remember the age was given, should go to the east and about 200 kilometers from Warsaw, they were supposed to organize new divisions and so on. So with the three friends of mine, we started to go to the east. Unfortunately, there was no other transport because the railway stations and railway tracks were in many places destroyed by the Luftwaffe. So then we went by foot. When we arrived, you know, at the near Bug, the river Bug, so the Russians were just on the other side of Bug. We didn't have any information during March. Of course, the people were telling various stories, some of them true, some of them untrue. So we came back, and about 100 kilometers from Bug, one of the friends of mine had a family. His father had a farm over there, so we stayed there and actually thought what to do further, because you never know. And there was still an announcement by radio from Warsaw that Warsaw is completely encircled and there is no access to Warsaw. So then, in this farm, there was another fellow, and we had two bicycles, so we started to the west, because this fellow was from the west, again. But there was a difficult to cross the river Vistula. Why? Because all the bridges, most of the bridges were destroyed and new hasn't been put in. So we heard that in Dęblin there is a bridge open, so we went in that direction. There was about, I think, 60 or 80 miles, so maybe a bit more. When we are nearing, you know, the town of Dęblin, the people said, don't go there because you will lose your bikes, because the Germans are confiscating all the bikes, whoever wants to cross the bridge. So then we went about another 100 or 150 kilometers down the river, and we found a bridge just completed by the German army, because the old one was destroyed. And we crossed the bridge, and after we crossed the bridge, I mean, on the bridge, there was, before the bridge actually, you know, so there was few German soldiers with sacks, and one wanted weapon, if somebody had a pistol, so he had to give the pistol. The other collected razors, you know, because it was too dangerous for the German army, so the people were dropping the razors, you know, and then any other sharp